So this is a remix or just an announcement that the show Tenfro was reading is going on hiatus for at least, I don't know, maybe the next 5 to 6 weeks. I will be reposting previously popular episodes. And also I will be taking this time to basically focus on the revamp of a pilot that I'm working on and basically reissuing it to several contests. I have several follow-up episodes. I will also be concentrating on writing, and so the podcast will just go on a little bit of a break to allow me the time to invest in myself as well as my creative endeavors. And as always, I really appreciate the listening audience. Come back often, tell your friends, and I'll see you in about maybe 5 to 6 weeks. Y'all have a good one. The Final Frontier. The stories contained within this content are the after 5 p.m. and before 8 p.m. escapades of a middle-aged space nerd with a fro, continuing to talk about things that only interest me for bonus content. I will talk about space news, pop culture in space, and shop talk, ramen, and break down the latest episode of Star Trek, whatever is coming out from the latest franchise. And also whatever is popping in my head. If you're up for this journey, just know that this is a metered, shade-laced opinion. If you don't agree, don't subscribe, but I hope you will. And thanks for the support. I love Close Encounters of the Third Kind, and I hope that won't get me flagged as far as it goes, because NASA does not cease to disappoint with all the good news and things I get to discover. And I'm glad I actually finally sat and recorded this episode of Tenfro's Bar, because number one, I'm hopeful that it can be edited and it'll be able to go up on time on Thursday, but I'll also be able to check the feedback and see what you guys think. So what's going on with NASA news? I think the biggest thing that has come out of NASA is the Artemis II crew has been selected. And I think all of us know all of these people. Christina Cook will be the first woman not just to slingshot around the moon, because that's the crux of the Artemis II program, but she's been doing the damn thing since she was named as an astronaut. She's an NC State grad. That's number one. But North Carolina doing some crazy stuff with a Democratic state senator switching sides and talking crazy. And I think, I want to say Christina is Lumbee, whoops, or just Native American, but don't hold me to that. Bomb. There's also Victor Glover Jr., one of the few African-American astronauts, and he has been with the program also since the beginning, and he will actually pilot the spacecraft that's going to be doing this very important mission. And he's just dope. He also says that it's more than just about space. It's also about being aware and being the change that's in society. He is fully aware of discrimination, colorism, et cetera. And he's right up there fighting and talking and speaking on it, which I think is really dope. There's Reed Wiseman. Do I know this brother? Hell no. I know he's a captain of the U.S. Navy. He has been a flight engineer aboard the International Space Center for many days. He was up there for 165 days. He has fostered a strong social media presence throughout his mission. Basically, I think he was instrumental in making space cool again. Dope, Mr. G. Reed Wiseman. And then there is Jeremy Hansen. This looks like he's given a TED talk on some type of mission essential doohickey. He will be the first Canadian to orbit the moon. Dorky, eh? Yeah. But that's what I feel about that. Also, I like to navigate not only to look at the official, oh, I'm going to need to order this. The actual crew portrait is bomb. And you can actually see it at NASA.gov. It's in one of their press release. But also, I like to look at the image of the day. And this is a Hubble space image showing the Milky Way on Rubin's galaxy. How enormous. It just brings into focus. I think this is more of an artist rendition, but interpretation of what was sent back from Hubble. But it also just demonstrates how this particular constellation is 800 light years across compared to our own 100,000 light years or so across, and has over a trillion stars. It's pretty dope. But then this also led me not only to talk about other NASA news, but also what is the latest discovery? And there is actually a system, the TOI system, T-O-I system, and a planet called TOI 700e that's orbiting its own star and could be an M-class planet. Being the Trekkie that I am, I'm going to basically put this system or the links to the system in my notes, the extended notes for the podcast. But also just to talk about this terrestrial exoplanet that orbits. And again, remember, an exoplanet is any planet outside of our solar system and revolving around its own star. It's about the mass of 0.818 Earths. It takes about a little bit less than 30 days at 27.8 days to complete one orbit around this star. And it was just announced, the discovery of it was just announced this year. It's approximately 102 light years from Earth, which would take us too damn long to get to it. But we can always dream, especially if we were able to figure out some, not just light speed, but subgalaxial speed that they get in Star Trek. That would absolutely be really, 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 really dope if we could go that fast to get there. So I'm actually just looking at some of the information that is on this. And TOI 700 is an MS. The star of this particular system is the most common type of star, which is much redder, cooler, and dimmer than the sun. And it's about maybe a fourth of the size of the sun, but it still puts off enough light and heat to actually make this planet habitable, possibly habitable. It would be dope to be able to take a peek, but it's just so weird when you talk about light years. So if it takes 300 and some odd thousand Earth years to freaking get there, by the time we actually see it, is it already extinct? And or what we're seeing now, is it basically yesterday's news? But there are other systems with M-class stars. There's K2-147, which is about 295 light years from Earth. Hypothetical visualization, it doesn't look all that habitable. Let's see, who else? There is Ophiuchi 11. Its star, the system, I don't think they have basically identified any planets with the same habitability as TOI 700e. But it will be fascinating as we get closer looks with the James Webb, if we will discover any type of other habitable planets around M-class stars, which is, dope on its own. That is a little bit of coffee shop music from the Relax Jazz Cafe guitar instrumental. Mornings are difficult without coffee and a bad cupper, in the words of most Brits, can make it worse and can set the tone for a really bad day. In this new show segment of Tenfro's Bar, Tenfro is Drinking, I hope to take a deeper dive with coffee nerds, roasters, and aficionados like my guest, Nicole, from Queen Bean Coffee.
Possibly earlier, after kind of being the go-between for my friends who wanted to purchase our coffee for many years, I set up the Queen Bean. And originally it was just to make it easier for my friends who wanted to order coffee. And then I realized other people who weren't my friends started buying on the site, so we moved it and shifted the purpose and made it a retail site. And that's how I got back into coffee.
So basically, you're the Markeisha Zuckerberg of coffee, because Facebook was basically started as a means for Mark Zuckerberg to basically message his friends, and then it's exploded now to the metaverse. So I think that is so dope. That is dope.
I love that.
Now I'm going to call you the Markeisha Zuckerberg of coffee. How about that? And without further ado, Nicole Markarian of Queen Bean Coffee, of the Mill family of coffee. Thank you for joining me on this segment of the podcast called Coffee Break with Nicole. And I have Nicole on the line, and she's going to just start out with just giving a brief background of her. And again, thank you so much for taking the time out of your busy day. You told me that you were off, but I'm just glad, I know with your schedule and you have your own podcast. This is such a great honor for you to be on my show. And here's Nicole.
Thank you, Felicia. It's an honor to be asked. I'm excited to share a little bit about Queen Bean Coffee with you. So Queen Bean Coffee is the retail division for Mills Coffee Roasting Company. So I've been in coffee my entire life. Mills Coffee is a fifth generation family roaster. We're one of the oldest, if not the oldest. I can't prove that we're the oldest, but I haven't seen any older coffee company that's been continuously owned and operated by the same family in the nation. So we've been roasting since 1860. I'm fifth generation. I run and manage the Queen Bean, thequeenbean.com. We sell primarily online. The Queen Bean is actually my mother's nickname. So my mother runs the roasting plant right now, and her nickname was always the Queen Bean. So rather than start the online division as Mills Coffee, I never wanted to compete with Mills customers. I started the online really to sell outside of our local area. I called it the Queen Bean in honor of her.
And what's the difference between your coffee and Mills, do you think, besides who runs it?
Nothing. Our coffee is only Mills Coffee. Everything is roasted at the Mills plant. It's the same exact coffee. So if I open a 5-pound bag, and for one of our customers that orders 1 pound, those other 4 pounds might go to a Mills customer. It's the same exact coffee. We ship out of Mills. The main difference is just marketing and audience. So Mills only sells wholesale and private label. We really only sell retail. That's the only difference between, Mills and the Queen Bean.
Now, you said you're fifth generation, and I think you are completely correct. Your family's company has been only owned by your family since 1860. Is that correct?
Correct. Only owned and operated. We have no outside investors, never have. It's just been really each generation, one sibling buys out the others and continues on. And that's how it's gone. At this moment, my mother and uncle run the company, and my brother works there, and I do the Queen Bean. So.
Oh, wow. And what led you back to coffee? Because I read a little bit of your background online,
And it said that, did you actually work in corporate America for a time and then you came back to coffee roasting? What led you back?
So I've always loved coffee. It's, you know, growing up with a family business, especially a small family business, it becomes like that business becomes like a sibling. And so I have been in the roasting plant. I mean, there's pictures of me at 2 or 3 months old riding around in the forklift. I've always been around coffee. I always loved coffee. I wanted to be in coffee from a young age, but my mother was insistent that, you know, both my brother and I go and try something else before we come into the family business. She's always been adamant that you have to try something else because, you know, you have to want to be there. You have to love it, or if it's a chore, it won't work. I went to college, got my master's, then I worked for hedge fund and banks, then in consulting for a while, but I always loved coffee. And I think back in 2014 or possibly earlier, after kind of being the go-between for my friends who wanted to purchase our coffee for many years, I set up the Queen Bean. And originally it was just to, like, to make it easier for my friends who wanted to order coffee. And then I realized other people who weren't my friends started buying on the site. So we moved it and shifted the purpose and made it a retail site. And that is how I got back into coffee. So I'd actually started selling coffee.
So basically, you're the Markeisha Zuckerberg of coffee, because Facebook was basically started as a means for Mark Zuckerberg to basically message his friends. And then it's exploded now to the metaverse. So I think that is so dope. That is dope.
I love that.
Now I'm going to call you the Markeisha Zuckerberg of coffee. How about that?
Okay, that sounds good.
And what is your favorite blend, and why is it your favorite blend, you think?
So my favorite blend, and this is going to sound totally cliche, but it's Mills 1860 blend. It's been our bestseller for generations. I love it because it's just perfectly balanced. It's got great acidity, great body, a great aroma, and it goes with anything. Like, you could have Mills with breakfast and eggs, or with tuna sandwiches. It somehow goes really good with tuna. You can have it with dessert. You can have it at night. It's just a great all-around coffee that, I don't know, my great-grandfather created the blend. My grandfather perfected it. They spent their whole careers on it, and they just got it right. It just is one of those incredibly versatile coffees that has everything you want. It's got the body. It's got texture. It's got the aroma. It's got the base notes, but also nice upper notes. It's really clean. It's got good acidity, but it's not too acidic. So that's really my favorite coffee. And, you know, I have other coffees that I also really enjoy, but I always end up going back to Mills. It's kind of that, you know, it's the one thing that I'll always return to. And even when you know, it's been some funny moments where I've been at the roasting plant and my mother will brew a pot. She always is brewing a pot of coffee. And, you know, I'll sit down and say, oh, wow, this one's really good. What is it? And if she may have used a slightly different bean composition in the blend, because they're always, you know, you have to work with what's available. And she's like, it's Mills. But, you know, if I hadn't been drinking Mills for a while and I've been drinking Peru, and she'll look at me like I'm crazy, and I'm like, it's still good. So I've had a few of those moments where I'm like, this smells really good. And she's like, it's Mills. So Mills is definitely my favorite blend.
And getting to Mills, and you say you basically have to work with the bean composition to get it to where it is, but what gives any coffee or blend balance? Is it roasting? Is it bean composition? How do you get the acidity? What do you actually have to do to give the balance to even be comparable to Mills 1860, you think?
I think that's a great question. It's actually everything. It's the bean composition, but more than that, it's the bean varietal. It's how the bean is processed. It's the key characteristics of the bean, which can change. You know, like, not every Colombian bean is the same. Not every El Salvador bean is the same. And so the roaster really has to know the nuances of every single origin bean that's going into creating that blend, how the characteristics are going to complement or offset each other, and then the spice notes and the inherent notes that are in those coffees and the sugars, how they will work with one another. And then once you have those basics, you want to decide if you want to use a pre-roast or a post-roast, because once you begin to roast the beans, you know, their character changes.
Yep.
And for some blends, it's better to mix the beans before they're roasted and get a common roasted, is what we do with mills. For others, you want to roast the beans after they, and you want to blend the beans after they've been roasted, because you'll get a different textural quality. So like our Seattle Express is a post-roast blend. So it's really everything. It's chemistry. It's the product, you know, it's the organic products that you're beginning with. And then it's how those products, which are the beans, are treated in every step of their life from harvest to roast. And I don't think that really answered your question well, but I hope it got
It really did, because it led to my next question, because what in the processing will actually kill the balance? You know, like you said, you need a bean that's been treated well or nicely from the time it's harvested, actually on the tree to harvest it, until you start processing it further when you're making your blend. But what in the in between will kill that balance, you, as part of the processing, do you think?
Necessarily kill the balance, but it would change the bean in the whole nature. And so that would be if it's, so there's three primary forms of processing, but the one that would really kind of throw it off is or honey process, because that would bring a lot of sweetness into the bean. So if you had a bean that was even semi-washed, it will change it, because it's going to have more of the natural sugars. So depending on how you clean the bean or process the bean, that determines how much of the coffee cherry sweetness gets into the coffee bean, which is a different kind of sweetness than you get just as part of, you know, the natural bean.
How can you honey process? How does that process work?
Okay, so a coffee bean is the seed of a coffee cherry.
Right.
And most often when people process the beans, you want to get off all of the, you know, you want to get off the cherry, you want to get off all the skin, you want to get everything on the parchment, you want everything off that bean, so you just have the bean. But there's another process, a honey process, where people actually leave part or all of the cherry on the coffee bean while it dries. And that coffee cherry has a honey sweetness that will seep into the coffee bean as the bean is drying. So if you have I forgot the tiers for the honey processing, because we only have two honey processed coffees. But if you let the bean pretty much dry with almost all the cherry on it, it's going to taste like a really honey flavored bean. It's going to be a very, very sweet bean. You'll even be able to smell like a waft of honey when the coffee's brewing.
Exactly. And it doesn't sound like the Mills 1860 doesn't use that process. Is that correct?
No. Most of the beans that go into Mills 1860 are washed.
Are washed.
So you're really just getting the beans when they're washed. Yes.
You just get the bean. I never knew that.
Yeah. We have a blog on processing that I can send you after. It's pretty cool. I mean, processing completely changes the way a bean.
If you definitely, please actually send that directly to my email, and I'll actually include it in the extended podcast notes, because I was already typing in, I need processing imaging of a coffee bean, because I knew this was going to be dope, because I'm a big old nerd. I knew I was going to need something, but I want to basically share with other coffee nerds that processing, because I don't think a lot of people know that. And do you think true coffee aficionados, do they prefer the sweeter coffee bean, or they want a bean that's actually balanced? But, you know, coffee has that kick. I'll add a little bit of raw sugar, but I don't want my coffee to be excessively sweet. I'm not that type of coffee drinker.
I think true aficionados they want to explore the entire range of coffee, but in my experience, most will go for a washed, a very clean bean where you're getting to taste, you know, this whole slew of aromatics and flavor notes. I can't remember off the top of my head how many aromatic and flavor notes coffee has, but I'm pretty sure it exceeds 700. Actually, I know it exceeds 700. I just can't remember how many it has. And so the cleaner the bean, the more you're going to get to taste those flavor notes. So I would say, you know, those diehards really want the purest form of the bean when they're tasting.
And the last thing I think I wanted to also just impress upon, you basically said every time you go into the Mills plant, your mother always has a pot of coffee brewing. Yep. What do you guys use? Is it drip? Do you like the French press? What exactly, how is she, or is it just a regular carafe of coffee that she got from her coffee maker? What do you suggest using?
Love pour over. So I think if you really want to taste a coffee, I would go with the pour over. It's just a really clean, smooth cup. I pour over. That's her go-to. That's my go-to. The French press is really nice, but you get a lot of oils in the coffee, so it's hard to taste that brighter upper notes. So if you have a very acidic coffee, like a Kenya, or, you know, even certain Central Americans, that got beautiful, bright floral notes and sweet citrus notes. If you put those into a French press, it often over-extracts, and they just begin to taste sour. So we're in a pour-over. They come across beautifully. And that's pretty much true with, basically, you just get the purest flavor in a pour-over. So French press is great, but I would really only do that with a darker roast or a heavier coffee where you really want to get out those base and spice notes.
Awesome. And basically, when did I actually start working in Maui? I worked in Maui for about 6-7 months back in 2009. And I was a nut. A little bit about my background is I'm a board certified pediatrician, and I used to do contract work. I've had 14 medical licenses at one time. And one of my most interesting license and where I worked was actually on Maui. I would catch the red eye from Charlotte, North Carolina, to Honolulu, and then to Maui, work about 10 or 11 days, and then catch the flight back because I worked in South Carolina, which is like 30 minutes from where I lived in Charlotte. And it was there that all the coffee that I had, I went from, you know, pre-ground and not really caring to basically only buying coffee beans, got me a French press, and went from there. For what is your preference? I have my coffee grounder. I have one in my RV. I mean, I'm bougie. So I have an RV, but I have a coffee maker as well as a coffee grinder.
Hey, I get it.
Yeah. And I only use beans, but what is your preference? And does that kill? I guess it would kill the whole coffee making experience for me, but what do you suggest? Or is there's really no difference? It's just a state of mind.
So I would say it depends on the way you're going to brew your coffee and the quality of the grinder. So if you're using a French press, you don't need perfectly even ground. So you could use a blade grinder, you could use a burr grinder, and you're still going to get a nice extraction out of the grinds. If you are going to do a drip or a pour over, you need precisely ground grinds. You need the coffee to be, basically you want the surface area of every grind to be the same so that you get the best extraction and the cleanest extraction from the coffee. So in that case, I would say purchase a burr grinder or get it pre-ground, because using a blade grinder for drip coffee is going to give you uneven grounds. It is going to affect the taste of the coffee because some grounds will be over-extracted and some will be under-extracted. So,
yeah, Krups is my go-to right now. It's like a drip that I use in my drip, but it does make sense. I may have to go. Ooh, you mean to tell me I actually have to get pre-ground coffee? Really? Wow.
If you're using a French press, I believe you said you use a French press.
I did, but primarily it's I use my drip.
Yeah, so the Krups, I didn't think they did a French press, but I don't know every piece of equipment. Do you have a blade grinder or a burr grinder?
It's a blade.
Then, yeah, I would say you might want to try either getting a pre-ground bag of coffee or trying a burr grinder. They have some great burr grinders out there that, you know, they're priced well. They're flexible, so you could grind for a French press. A pour over, a mocha pot, or an espresso, and you'll just get a much better grind. You'll get a better consistency.
And what?
And from there, you'll get a better cup of coffee.
And I'm going to take you up on that because I wouldn't mind to have. I do. All of my grinders at this time are blade, but if I can get a reasonably priced burr grinder, then I'm going to taste the difference if I'm going to continue to use drip. I'm going to taste the difference, and I'm going to have to get back to you to say she was right. And I'll put that in the extended podcast notes. don't keep me from a good time. So, and I think, again, it's about the experience. And if it's going to enhance the taste of the coffee, why wouldn't you try? And you know what I mean?
I think you'll notice you get a cleaner cup, and you're going to taste and smell more of the upper notes, which are going to be those lighter citrus and floral notes.
Awesome.
In your coffee.
And
we'll see. I'm going to be curious to see what you come back with.
That I think is going to be awesome. And then on the, let's touch base on this, I'm going to call it scam coffee. I actually got I was in Virginia and I wanted to get my coffee beans, and I got, it was advertised for a Walmart pickup. It said Hawaiian blend coffee. And then I was like, oh, this is cool, because I was, you know, going back in my memories of being on Maui. But I was like, how can it be Hawaiian blend, but the beans are from Central and South America? And
then
scam alert. So
a lot of people do that. A lot of people, whenever you see a blend, do exactly what you did and look at the bean composition if they have it. Or blends, you know, blends don't, it's a blend. It doesn't really tell you anything. So we never name our blends after a region because we're blending different coffees. It would be very rare for someone to blend a Kona. I mean, we have blended a Kona a few times, or Maui, we have usually used Kona. We've blended it and we've called it a blend only to extend it if we have a very limited number of bags. So we'll usually do, you know, a little single origin and some blends just to be able to extend that Kona. Yeah, you have to really look. A lot of Jamaican Blue is not Jamaican Blue. A lot of Kona is not Kona. A lot of Hawaiian Blend is not Hawaiian Blend. Yeah, there's a lot of scamming. You see that mostly happen with Kona or anything from Hawaii. And then with Jamaican Blue, so Kauai and Jamaica, they have very limited crops. Like, they're not going to be available. I would kind of think of them like strawberries or oranges. The fresh crop is not available all year. It's got a limited supply and it sells out every year. So if you're seeing that in the market all the time, all year long, something's wrong. It's not real. Unlikely it's real. It could be real, but it would be very unlikely just because they don't grow that much, they don't produce that much, and most of it sells out very quickly.
Yeah, what I saw in Hawaii was, if it's true Kona, it has a seal on it, and there is no blend. And again, got to be really careful. Yeah. It makes sense now that if they're going to extend the life, it's going to have to be mixed with something. And this one, this bag of coffee did not have that Kona seal on it at all.
There have even been instances where people have, so Captain Cook is one of the biggest producers of Kona, and people have actually bought Captain Cook burlap sacks and put Central and South American coffee into the Kona bags and tried to pass it off as Kona.
Oh, now that is, Jesus, that is awful. But I guess if you can take
We never sell our bags. We repurpose our bags.
Exactly. Wow. That's wild. So, again, we're coming up to the end of this segment. And again, thank you so much for joining me. I've learned so much, and I got my homework assignment that I really would like to follow up with you on. But give us a little bit of plug about the location of the mill again, and just tell the listening audience a lot about your show that's available to listen immediately on the website. But I pulled it up in Spotify.
So Coffee Roasting Plant is located in Providence, Rhode Island. We are not open to the public, but if you'd ever like to come Monday through Friday and see the inside of the plant, and hopefully we'll be roasting. We roast 3 to 5 days a week. You can definitely email me at nicole@thequeenbean.com, and we can set up a time for you to come and see the plant and try some coffees. As for the Queen Bean, we sell only online at the moment. It's thequeenbean.com, and we offer 15% off your first purchase. Code FT15, and we always have a monthly special. So every month, at least one coffee is 20% off. So if you have a favorite, you can kind of follow us, and your favorite will at some point be 20% off.
Can you go ahead and repeat that
code? We also have a blog and a podcast. Sure. So it's FT as in first time, 15.
For 15% off? And I will include the code as well as the link to your website in the podcast extended notes, and go ahead and tell about the show and where to find it.
Okay, so in our we have our podcast, which is called Coffee with the Queen. It's also the name of our blog. You can find Coffee with the Queen on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, pretty much wherever you listen. Coffee with the Queen is available. It's also available at coffeewiththequeen.podbean.com. And our podcast has full episodes on key topics like processing. And then we also have a segment that's called Coffee with the Queen in 60-ish Seconds, which releases once a week, and it gives listeners, within approximately 60 seconds, a fun coffee fact or piece of knowledge like how to brew with a pour over.
Awesome. I'm looking forward to following up with you as well as the next episode. And again, this was awesome. How many times have we heard that jam, y'all ready for this, Jot Jams? You gotta jam to this. You gotta be ready for this. I'm just saying. Y'all ready for this? Well, I am. It's lots of moving parts going on pre-draft for the Dallas Cowboys. We've traded for Brandon Cooks. We've scheduled top 30 visits. We got a whole bunch of private workouts upcoming. And we got a whole... I didn't know Michael Gallup had ACL surgery, girl. That sounds just... Oof. Jalen Tolbert is a huge question since he's been redshirted. And then, I don't know who Simi Fehiko is. But once... Cowboy, then Dolphin. Now looking at Cedric Wilson again, that's going to be pretty dope because the Dolphins have announced that they're ready to trade good old Cedric Sedge. All these moving parts. I'm like, y'all should just kept Zeke, but that's just me. I think he's a running back. It's a wholly different position, but still. And then there's everybody else that could potentially be traded to the Cowboys now that we got some freed up money in. You know, but I'm just excited about the draft. I don't know who the first round's going to go to. There's going to be a whole bunch of prospects. I don't know how good all of quarterback possibles looked in the combine. If anybody's going to want to go and play backup, but that's how Dak got his job. And the way this squad looks, child, Dak, your job could be in jeopardy if you don't pull it out. But I'm hopeful that with the shakeup in the offensive coordinator squad that things are looking up for the offense for the Dallas Cowboys. I like the movements. I like the changes. I can only be hopeful as I am from year to year. And also, the NCAA draft is off. The women, LSU won. I don't understand how sign used by the white girl when the black girl of the winning team uses it, she's being crass. This double standard bullshit is getting on my nerves, but don't care because I don't get it. But she was throwing shade, mad shade. It was hysterical. UConn won the men's game. I had Memphis taking it all, but they got beat out by San Diego State. They beat them like they stole something, but that's neither here nor there. It was real exciting for me this year. I even had a poster made up for the brackets. Still don't understand how I chose some of the brackets. Actually, I do. If the state had a stupid politician that was getting on my nerves, that basically automatically got you downgraded. Also, if your team had done some dumb shit and y'all got away with it, and I found out about it before I picked, that got you downgraded. Some places it actually worked. And also, I was looking forward to a lot of the upsets. By the time I got more involved, some of the upsets it didn't work out that way. Genuinely, teams like UConn actually have a legacy of winning. I mean, this is like their fifth national championship. I'm still bummed University of Florida
Didn't make it this year, but what can you expect when you're from freaking Florida? Florida man, come on. Be for real, y'all. And what else was I going to talk about? I'm going to navigate over to Pocket because I just want to make sure that I am not missing anything as far as sports and just stuff in general. We got gadgets. Oh, we got the scowling face of the worst comb over ever in Chump was indicted. Greatest yoga for stability. But other than that, not a whole bunch going on that I'm actually interested in and talking about sports with you guys. So I'm going to go back to fighting my little dog and watching Star Trek Picard again. And I just want to go on notice to just say, have you ever watched a show where you're like, huh? So you got to watch it again because you don't get it. I think Picard, I thought it was good, but I didn't really get last week's episode. That's why I'm going to have to watch it again before I actually talk about it this week. So if that was your feeling, yay or nay, confusing episode, Star Trek last week, let me know. And then we can talk about it. Send your comments to tinfrowwasreading@gmail.com or drop some comments in wherever you listen to this podcast in the apps. And if it's not too trolly, if the message is not too trolly, I'll actually read it on air.
Vial Dance, Evolution of Star Trek.
Beautifully written, excellently shot, awesomely executed. Combination of CGI and some of the best special effects I've seen on any series thus far. I decided to go ahead and just record live as I'm watching, repeatedly watching this episode of Picard. And I've noted several things. Number one, the new changeling ship is dope. I think the big showdown is going to be on Frontiers Day. And even though they talk a lot on StarTrek.com, the big showdown, and Jack is the key. It's either the key to the Federation demise, or he is the key to what is going to be able to beat them again. As I sit here and I try to figure out why the Dominion is tripping, because they were just cool in their little pool of congealed crap. Jim Hadar was doing their bidding. The little blue people were tripping, and they had clear domination of the Gamma Quadrant. It wasn't until they did some colonizing crap that we, or the British and the Portuguese and the Russians, are trying to do. They basically are worse than the Borg or any other species that warlike and that want to prevail their own ideas and order on the rest of the universe. There's something going on with Jack Crusher and Geordi's daughter. That disease that Jean-Luc Picard has is also the key to what allows him to see possible altered changelings. If it is, it's pretty dope. All I know is that ship, that Vedic, is that her name? Is looking for them, trying to hunt them down, is, again, dope. It's just all kind of firepower. And all of her henchmen are like the Jim Hadar on crack, but not as beautiful as the Jim Hadar, because Jim Hadar were cool on a subliminal level. I thought they were just probably strong, dope, but they were a little like addicted to drugs. I'm watching this and the Dominion are kind of like, when you think about it, the new and improved Russians. But they thought this was going to be real easy. They were going to throw their big boat or ship at the Federation, and we were going to go away quietly and fold up, because they, again, came at the rest of humanity and all other species and basically said, you don't have a right to exist because we want to impose our ideas and our cultures on you and exterminate you as payback for the war that we lost. Very similar to what's going on in Ukraine right now. That's not lost on me. But it also makes me hopeful that what we're going to have going forward is going to be more than what we could ever see previously. All of these people come into term. No, it's not lost on me that everybody from next generation is coming back to fight these fools. They're basically taking the better part of every other subsequent series with Tuvok and Seven of Nine and the Borg. I wouldn't be surprised if Sisko pops up. Well, Romulans have their worlds imploded. That's why Picard is here. But everything and everyone that had a hand in building this franchise and every subsequent franchise is coming back and making a contribution. Because even though Jean-Luc Picard, I don't think, is going to make it beyond this series and as a legend, because he's like 800 years old. But it's basically setting up his son and everybody that has been in every subsequent series and has the mobility to do it, are basically setting them up for the next series that's going to place Picard. What do you guys think? The most important thing I've done today is force myself to take out and put up or put out the recycling. I finally put together a pool top reel for my pool cover that I bought like 3 months ago that I was too lazy to put together. And then I was mad that the pool company that was supposed to service my pool wouldn't volunteer to put that bitch together. It took me 2 days, but I finally got it together and I finally got the pool cover attached to it. I'm hopeful that this storm is not going to blow this to oblivion because they're calling for severe weather. I don't know what to make of the Dominion, the rest of the parts of the Dominion, because it looks like Vadic has taken over the USS Titan. There's something about this Frontier Day that basically just irks this new and improved Dominion, because Frontier Day is supposed to be the 250th anniversary of Starfleet. And I guess people, because there's so many things about Starfleet that basically irks people, that this whole nation has decided that they have to do everything that they can to get Jack Crusher and this force is supposed to get them to their knees. Therefore, the next episode is Surrender. We got Deanna Troi supposed to be making an appearance. I think, you know, what's her name? Dr. Crusher is talking too much. She's getting on my nerves. But I'm glad Will Riker's going to be back. I'm not sure if he's a changeling. I'm digging Amanda Plummer as Vadic. And even Captain Shaw, I'm sure he's cussing and just going off. I'll actually include the trailer with the extended podcast notes, but it looks pretty dope. It's just I think they revealed a lot. A lot of the images I'll try to include in this week's podcast note. I'm just hopeful that all of my little, there's going to be no E1 or E2 tornadoes touching down or wind damage from the storm system that's supposed to be blowing through. I need to make sure that I get my flashlight, water, computer, and I take it all with me and just head downstairs in the basement if I need to, because this severe weather is no joke. And just like what's coming up on Star Trek Picard, I hope somebody will think that a lot of my musings and my observations on this episode of Picard are engaging, and it just would make you think like I will. What is the whole purpose of Dominion? Is Jack Crusher the key to the Federation's survival, or he's also the cause of the demise of Starfleet? I don't know. It could go either way. It's just that, but he has that Section 31 gear on. I don't know, child. I just hope he figures out his purpose and he not only secures his survival, but Jordy's daughter, who is vastly become who he's connected to, survival. And maybe he can cast his ability to seek out and destroy any of the Dominion themselves as well as their footmen, because that's what he, it's basically like he cast his own discernment of the Dominion to Jordy's daughter. So I hope that is key, that he can do that on a larger level, because they getting ready to bring the funk on Frontier Day is what I think. So I'm looking forward to next episode, Surrender. This previous episode of Dominion was confusing, but I'm glad I watched it again because it's pretty dope as usual.
I wanted to end my broadcast or this recording with just some fresh beats and as a reminder for us to be kind to ourselves, be kind to our minds,
Mike Beats,
and keep creating. I mean, there's just so much horrible things and mean things going on in the world. And this is not goodbye. This is just until we meet again or until I record and drop another episode.
Mike Beats.
I hope you enjoyed this episode as much as I've enjoyed creating it. Check me out on social media. Tenfro is reading on Instagram, TV Food Wine Girl on Twitter, and Tenfro is reading the book club. I hope to get into a better state of mind as we recover as a nation from just the tragic happenstance of the last several weeks. And again, I admonish you to be kind to yourself and be kind to others. Be the action that you want to be. If you want kindness, give kindness, exude kindness, and just love yourself and love others. And again, thank you for listening.
Mike Beats.